all that I can be. And maybe one day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever turn and face myself and learn to fly?
Aloha, I am your host, May Leilani, and this is the Universal Spiritual Connection, a place of shared unity and equal common ground for all peoples and cultures, a unity not built on separation and blindness, but a solid foundation built on respect for all walks of life, molded by the thirst of the people for change, in unity, bridging the gap, for we are the voice of we, the people. Mahalo to all the listeners of Pal Talk and BBSRadio.com. Our call-in numbers are toll-free, 888-389-3452 and 877-489-6350. Our direct line, same area code, is 530-776-5144 or 776-5154 and 413-4511. I am really excited about this show this evening. I've been really looking forward to actually sitting down and talking story with our guests for this evening. But before I share a wonderful wealth of information with all of you tonight, I'd like to personally give each and every one of you a warm welcome to the Universal Spiritual Connection. I trust that all of you are out there doing great things, and it's always an honor to be with each of you every week. So thank you for being here with us tonight. Our guest this evening is author David Jerome. He has written an incredibly wonderful book that I've had the real pleasure to sit down and really sink my whole self into, and the title is called Roast Beef Promise. When your dad's dying wish is to have his ashes sprinkled in each state, what's a son to do? And I have to say to each and every one of you, I personally found myself being totally lost in this incredible book. I was able to sit down and really reflect on my own personal experiences and journey. I have very much in common with David, where I spent years traveling across country throughout the United States, and I'm really looking forward to having David share his own experiences with each of us this evening. But before we invite David onto the show, please allow me to share some wonderful information with each of you tonight. Not only is David an author, he wrote and published the Irrelevant Times comedy newspaper, which appeared on newsstands in 5 Western states in the mid-90s. He's written for comedians including Jay Leno and Jay Thomas, radio joke services, and appeared on the late-night talk show Into the Night with Rick Dees, a contest winner performing his own material. His work has appeared in many publications, including the Last Lines section of the Los Angeles Times. He's also an investor in a minor league baseball team with Desperate Housewives star James Denton. I'd like to share that website, and that is www.smacksbooks.com. For all of your convenience, we will be posting that information. I'd like to personally invite each of you to explore this wonderful book titled Roast Beef Promise. Without further delay, let's all give David a welcome to the show. Aloha, David.
Hi, Leilani.
How are you tonight?
Well, I'm doing great. That was a nice long intro. You did my whole bio there.
Well, there's so much more to you, though, Dave, and I'm really thrilled that I'm actually going to have this opportunity to talk with you. What an incredible person, and what great journeys you've had, and continue are having.
Yeah, you know, I love to travel, and I love comedy writing, so it was kind of inevitable that I could put those two things together, and that's really how Roast Beef came along. So I'm really glad you read it, and I'm glad you like it.
I did indeed, and I have to say, David, you've done really well on having best of both worlds. You can't get any better than that. So you set
yeah.
yourself up tonight, David, because my question to you, what was it like to actually write for Jay Leno and Jay Thomas?
Well, you know, that's back in the late 80s, I was doing some stand-up comedy and all that, but, you know, I pretty soon realized that wasn't the right road for me. It was just, you know, it was late nights, and really you just have to pay your dues, and they would put you on super late. And so I decided at that point that I was going to be a joke writer. And so, you know, I just started just pumping out the material and sending it off to whoever I could think of, and, you know, within about a year, I got a phone call from Jay Leno, and he asked me if I would be one of his freelance writers, because this is back when he was guest hosting for Johnny. And so I signed on and did that for a couple years, and I would submit jokes to him on a Friday, and then he would look over them over the weekend and decide what he wanted to do on Monday night. And then, you know, you'd either get a check or you'd try a little harder the next week. But it was a great learning experience, and that's really, you know, how I learned to be a working writer.
Wow, what an incredible experience. I mean, you know, I always, when I would watch his program, I'd always sit there and wonder if those guys actually came up with their own jokes. So to actually have someone that, you know, assisted in writing these jokes for these guys is just an amazing moment for me personally, and I'm sure as well for all our listeners, which, by the way, it shows up very nicely in this wonderful book, Roast Beef Promises. So let me ask you this. How close are the character in this book relate to you?
Well, you know, I tried to, you know, rechannel that kid that's, you know, myself at 20 and just kind of write this book from his point of view. And so, you know, I did a lot of traveling, and I journaled the whole time that I was traveling, which I really stress to anybody that if you know, whenever you go out to always journal, because, you know, you have so many experiences constantly while you travel. Sometimes you forget about what you know, saw and experienced at the beginning of the trip by the time the trip is over. So I think it's really important to write that down every single day while you're traveling, especially. And that's what I did. And you know, I would go on pretty long road trips. You know, one time I went for 2 months just by myself in my 85 Chevy Blazer driving around the country. And, you know, I didn't have any plan. If I liked the place, I would stay. If I felt like driving, I would drive. And I just, you know, just kind of toured around. And I would just journal like any kind of experiences or observations that I would have. And that's really the core of the book. That's where it came from. So, that's the story.
Well, you know, I found this book, you know, matter of fact, I'm actually going to be taking it with me. I'm going on a trip myself.
Okay.
I'm one of those individuals that love to travel, but I'd like to share this book with quite a few people because, you know, once I got into it, I went, oh my gosh, you know, there's not, you know, a lot of people out in our world today don't always have that opportunity to get out there and experience what it's like to be on open road and meeting people and going through different experiences. And a lot of them I could actually relate to with my own experiences. And you've had quite a few, haven't you?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of those common connections that people find in the book, you know. There's so many different characters and so many places, you know, because he visits all 48 states. So people really find a connection with this book, you know, either places that they have also been or people, some of the characters in there, they say, oh, you know, that guy's just like my uncle, or that guy's just like my neighbor, or what. You know, there's just a lot of common bonds, and that really makes me happy that, you know, that we're all in this, like, you know, human experience together, and that the connection of this book is, you know, similar to their own life experience. So that really makes me happy, and I've been getting a lot of good feedback on the book from people that have read it. Just recently, there was this one lady that was in Chicago, and she heard me doing an interview there, and she, one of her friends actually told her about it, because she's like a real life roast beef that is out there sprinkling her husband's ashes in all 50 states, and she's been doing it for about 6 years, and she's done 40 of 50 states. So that's the kind of thing that makes me the happiest, is, you know, putting it out there and letting people find it and, you know, have a good time reading it. And, but then just that shared connection and the feedback that comes to me is really the best part of the whole deal.
So let me ask you this then, David, you know, what was the roast beef promise to his father, if you would share with us tonight? And you personally, do you have a close relationship with your father?
Yeah, luckily for me, my dad's still alive, and he lives here in the same town that I'm in. I'm based in the L.A. area, and I see him, you know, probably 3 or 4 times a week. So, yeah, it's a very close relationship. And so I'm really lucky that way. You know, a lot of people, when I'm interviewed, they'll think that it's more autobiographic, that, you know, I actually did take my father's ashes and sprinkle them around. But, you know, luckily for me, he's here to experience all this with me. And, you know, he's one of the dedications in the book, as well as my two sons. So I kind of forgot what the question was. I got off on how great my dad is.
Oh, it's okay. Well, and I had also had asked, you know, what was the promise in roast beef?
Roast beef is, that's the kid's nickname. You know, he's like a 20-year-old college student. And, you know, he just doesn't have a whole lot of direction. He's in college, but he's not doing super well. And his dad is dying of Alzheimer's disease. And at the time of his death, he actually believes that he's FDR. And so he asks his son to sprinkle his ashes in all 48 states. And his son, you know, Roast Beef, reluctantly agrees to fulfill his dad's dying wish, even though he's not really in his right mind at the time of his death. And so, you know, I just remember my early 20s being kind of a time where I didn't really know which direction I was going in, and so I, like I said, I kind of channeled that kid and figured, you know, what if at that time I just did something like this, where I would just go off and fulfill my dad's dying wish. And so it takes him about a year and a half. He goes through all 48 states and has, you know, some really incredible adventures and meets really interesting people, and, you know, has a lot of laughs along the way. But it's also really a story of commitment to family and perseverance against adversity. So, you know, there's some core issues there that I hope people pick up on, but it's also, you know, a lot of laughs.
And that was the key, too, is the passion for family, you know, that bond that we all have, and the dedication. And I had to chuckle because I said, oh, yeah, sure, the father knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, that he could have been thinking, you know, that is the exact best thing for him, to get out and get some life experience under his belt. And it really does. By the end of the book, it sets him in a new direction. He kind of finds a little niche business after this that other people will pay him to take their loved ones' ashes to various places around the world and sprinkle, you know, their loved ones' ashes. And so that really sets up the sequel that I'm working on right now, which I'm calling Roast Beef Sprinkles. And it's just a story of how he, you know, has his own business and meets, you know, more interesting characters and goes to this one will go more into Europe and Australia and a few other places that I've been to.
Okay, that's it, David, because I'm holding you to the next book, okay?
It'll be out there. Don't worry.
All right, because I know that that book's going to be just as good as this one. And, you know, I personally wanted to really thank you because it's been so long since I had actually sat for a moment and really reflected on my own cross-country traveling and experiences, and, you know, and coming straight from Hawaii and not knowing the mainland, you know, that was a big, that's a big deal, especially for a woman, you know, and just to, I personally started my own journey hopping on a bus, with Trailways and traveled across country. And boy, has I ever learned a lot of things by traveling on a bus. And you know, if you gave me that opportunity today, I'd take it.
Oh, absolutely. That, it's really just the best thing. You just have so much experience every single day when you're on the road. And, you know, what I would like to do best whenever I was on the road is, you know, just chat with people, because people love telling their stories. And so I would always go into, you know, diners or bars, or I'm a big baseball fan, and so I would, you know, go to a baseball game and just, you know, start a conversation with people. And you know, they're proud of where they live, and they want to tell you about it, especially if, you know, you're out of town. They want to tell you the best places to go, and they and tell you their life story. And you know, I'd really enjoy hearing that. And, you know, again, I would journal. So that's how I built a lot of the characters in this book, is just people that I met on the road.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the book was actually filled with the true spirit of, you know, of anyone, you know, and being able to really get out there and celebrate life and really plugging into the experience and to the people that you actually meet, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, because in the book you have all these different experiences, and out of all those various experiences, David, which one of those sticks out the most to you that you'd like to share with us?
From the book, let me try to think. You know, there were so many people that were just open to roast beef and helping him out along the way. And, you know, some turned out good and some didn't. Like, if you remember, he was kind of befriended by a guy at a baseball game in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And, you know, he actually invited him to come back to his house and sleep on the couch and gave him a place to stay. You know, and that one didn't turn out as well. I don't really want to ruin what happened there. But, you know, just... That's what I wanted to show. What was how roast beef was open to experience, and also that the people out there on the road were you know, were helpful to him for the most part. You know, you always are going to run into a few people that aren't with you, but people really embraced his story and welcomed him, you know, into their homes. Like, you know, there's a scene in South Dakota where a family that runs a souvenir stand at Mount Rushmore kind of almost adopts him, really briefly. You know, they give him a job and a place to stay, and he works there, you know, during some times when he's kind of like down and out a little bit. And, you know, there are people out there. And something else that I really like is roast beef's entrepreneurial spirit, because, you know, he has several setbacks along the way, and he's never out there, you know, begging or woe is me. Like, he always keeps a positive attitude and, you know, keeps his eye on the prize kind of thing, and, you know, quitting is just never an option, and he finds some way to just keep going forward.
Yes, and you know, it's so obvious that, you know, the strength of the human spirit and the commitment, you know, to fulfill a family wish. And that's what was so intriguing to me, because, I mean, David, let's reflect on that for just a moment. How many of us really take a moment within our day and really reflect on the human spirit and the resources that we actually have available to us within ourselves and as we step and embark in the world today? And so that's where I found the book very refreshing. Now, one of my favorite experiences personally is when he came across and helped the elderly man with the oxygen tank. Yeah. That was so heartfelt. It was just amazing to me.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things that he just kind of got himself into without even trying. Like, he thought he was just doing a quick little, you know, he was going to help the guy from the grocery store out to his car with some groceries. And then it just kept going and kept going, and next thing you know, this guy wants to travel all the way from Kansas to see the ocean one last time, and Roast Beef is there helping him try to, you know, jump on a train with an oxygen tank. And, you know, it was just that I really enjoyed that part, too. I'm glad you picked that out, because that was funny how it just, you know, just kept going and going, and he was wondering, like, what did I get myself into? But he doesn't quit. He just keeps right on going.
I actually got the whole visual. It was like as if I was him himself, you know, assisting this elderly man, you know, with this oxygen tank and actually trying to run and get on the train and stuff. It was just really comical, but yet at the same time, there was that, once again, that real heartfelt, that I could feel my heart getting all warm and fuzzy, you know, with the spirit of a human being.
Well, that's so great. I love that you picked up all that because, yeah, you know, I want to have some laughs, but I do want that underlying, you know, human connection.
And, you know, that's what I could relate to is I know all of us can, where we get ourselves into a situation because of, you know, we want to be there to be kind and supportive, right? And then you start rolling your eyeballs up to the back of your head and you're going, oh, my God, what did I get myself into.
Exactly.
Did I share that over live radio? Oh no, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
And so let me ask you this then. I would really like to know some of your own personal experiences as well, but one that may really stick out to you that may have really propelled you to sit down and come, you know, write Roast Beef's Promise. I'm sure it had to, there was something within your own experience that really inspired you.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's just wanting to tell your tale. Like I was saying, you know, when I travel, like people love to tell their own stories. So I think that, for me, that's probably what it was, is, you know, I had traveled so much and I had done so much of it by myself that, you know, you just want to be able to share that with other people. And so that's, I just had so much material from my journals that I, you know, put this together, and I needed a real strong premise also of, you know, why he would go out to all 48 states and why he wouldn't give up when all these things went wrong with him. But it was basically, you know, just because I wanted to share my story.
Yes. So I want to know why Hawaii wasn't one of those states.
Well, you know, I wanted to keep it in the contiguous 48, and that's how I came up with the Franklin Roosevelt thing, since there was only 48 states when he was president. And so we did that. But, you know, what I'm going to do, for one thing, I haven't been to Alaska yet, and then Hawaii, I haven't been there since almost 30 years when I was a little kid. So hopefully I can get to those in one of the sequels. And I'd love to go to Alaska and then just kind of finish my set, because, you know, I've visited 49 of 50, and so I'm just missing Alaska. But I'll pick those up at some point.
Yeah, that's definitely one of mine, as well as Alaska, and hopefully I'll make it this year. So let me ask you this, because I know with my own experiences on traveling cross-country numerous of times myself, you start to learn very quickly on how to literally travel, because I basically traveled across country with $20 in my pocket. I was able to do that comfortably between eating and all the other necessities that you find yourself in. So what are some of the cost-cutting techniques that you found were very useful to you that you're able to share with all of us tonight?
Well, you know, back when I was doing all that road tripping, you know, I was just kind of in my mid-20s. And so I would sleep in my car like every third night. I had an 85 Chevy Blazer, and the back seat would fold down, and, you know, I just brought a bedroll with me, and I was very comfortable back there. I don't know if I could do it anymore, but I had no problem sleeping in the car. And then, you know, I'd bring an ice chest with me, and so I'd have some food and some drinks. And so I was able to cut down on prices that way. And then, of course, you know, mooching off all kinds of friends and family as you drive cross-country, you know, any kind of, like, shoestring relative or friend of a friend, anybody with a couch, you know, I was pretty much calling them. So I was doing stuff like that. And one of the favorite things that I like to tell people is to try to figure out some way to make money on the road. You know, if you have any kind of a hobby or craft or small business or something like that, if you can be out there on the road making some money while you're traveling, that's you're ahead of the game. I have this one friend that he was an artist, and he was traveling here from California back to South Dakota, and he would just stop, you know, at various places along the way at towns, and he would go to the used car lots, and he would tell them, you know, I'm an artist, can I paint some advertising on your windshields of your cars and for a little bit of gas money? And sure enough, you know, they would let him do some art, and you know, it was unique, and they would put it there on the front of their lot, and then, you know, give him 20 or 40 bucks, and you know, he's down the road and basically getting his transportation paid for and doing his art at the same time. So I love stuff like that, you know, where people with an entrepreneurial mind. And so I always try to encourage that if you have any kind of, you know, craft or small business that you can do while you travel.
Yes, and it is possible, too. I mean, you know, what's really nice is that I firsthand have experienced it myself, especially, you know, for a woman. I'm sure there are a lot more men in the world today that have more of an opportunity to actually do that, but you know, one of the experiences I had that I'd like to share with you as well, David, and the listeners, is when I actually had journeyed up to Yosemite for the very first time. And anyway, I was jumping into one of the waterfalls up there and so forth, because I'd been on the road like all day long, and I was all hot and sweaty and, you know, the whole bit. And so, anyway, then I'm noticing that there's fish swimming in this waterfall, and I'm thinking, I'm really hungry. How am I going to catch this fish? Well, there all of a sudden shows up. We're 76 years old. They were twin sisters, and all of a sudden they started talking to me. So the next thing I know, they invite me up onto their land, and it was one of the most incredible experiences, because what I initially found out is that they had originally owned the entire Yosemite Park, and then, of course, portions of the Yosemite Park was sold to the state, which has become a national park, but they also owned a good portion of it. They also owned silver mines, which they actually took me to the silver mines along with, interestingly enough, the Wells Fargo stagecoach. That was part of the route that the Wells Fargo stagecoach would stop as a midpoint. And the building that the stagecoach actually would stop and rest and feed the horses still existed at that time. I'm not sure if it's still there. But they actually allowed me to take some of the artifacts, which I donated it to Wells Fargo. They allowed me to stay on their land and sleep and fed me. And I thought, this is too cool. And their family was one of the first settlers of that Yosemite area. They were homesteaders.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's an amazing story. That's great. I just love when you meet people while you're on the road like that, and then they really take you under their wing, you know, and tell you about their life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what was so neat about these two twin sisters is they, of course, had never gotten married. They were still living in the original cabin that had been built, you know, and passed down through the generations. And, you know, when you open the front door, the door handle was a tree limb that had been bent and molded into the door.
Wow.
And so a lot of the cabin was still, you know, in its original state from when it was first built, which, I, you know, that in itself is just amazing. I love stuff like that. But then they went into, they had named a lot of the birds and the, you know, frequent visits of like wolves and coyotes. And, I mean, they had blue jays flying down. They would call them by name and they would land on their hand and feed from right from their hand. Isn't that amazing?
Wow. Amazing, yeah.
And I got to experience that firsthand.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, that's one of the few places that I've never been. I've lived in the L.A. area my whole life. I've never been to Yosemite, so I got to get up there one of these
times. Well, we've got to get you on the program here, David.
Yeah. That's right. Well, that's kind of the way it is. You know, sometimes you go out and see the world, and then you forget about seeing the things in your own backyard. So I got to get up there.
Oh, and you will, and I promise you, David, intend on spending at least a couple of weeks up there because, I mean,
wow.
It's so massive and so much to see. I mean, the first experience I ever had was driving through one of those large, pardon me, because I'm not going to remember the proper tree, but it was so large that a car could drive through this tree. Now, I've never seen anything like that in my whole life.
Yeah.
Have you?
Well, I've seen pictures of that. Is that the redwoods or not?
Yes, thank you. Well,
yeah,
I got to stand right in the middle of this tree that cars drive through.
Yeah, that's amazing, you know, those things that have stood for, you know, hundreds of years, like 800 years or something.
That's right. And
yeah.
It wasn't until I really dived into your book that I started having this remembrance of all these wonderful experiences. And just like roast beef, you know, he had some uncomfortable situations as well, and I did as well also, and I'll share some of those later on. But before we do that, I'd like to welcome all those that have just recently tuned in to the Universal Spiritual Connection. We have the pleasure of speaking with author David Jerome. He has written a book titled Roast Beef Promise. Great book, everybody. The website is www.smacksbooks.com. So let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on the pros and cons of driving versus flying?
Well, I mean, it's not even a contest. If you have the time, driving is just so much better, you know, just for the freedom of the open road and being able to stop and go whenever you want. You know, if you have to fly, you know, if it's a time issue, then you have to fly. But, I mean, you know, if you really want to experience travel and I just love the freedom of the road. I just can feel the relaxation just come over my body. Well, like once I'm about, you know, 3 or 4 hours outside of L.A. and just, you know, just the open road and heading towards Arizona or Nevada or whatever. And so for me, it just, you know, it's a great relaxing feeling being able to do that. And so it's not even a comparison.
Absolutely. And you really, that's when you really are plugged in to how great of a world that we live in today, you know, and have lived on for eons of time. I mean, you get to see and experience the beauty of the land that, you know, many of us don't even realize is there for us to experience.
Yeah,
even just taking a side dirt road, you know, and let it lead you wherever.
Yeah, that's fun to just, you know, get a little lost from time to time. I remember one time, you know, I was driving through Montana, and, you know, I've never been a huge nature guy. You know, I grew up basically in a city and a suburb, and I just got up there, and I was just, like, blown away by just the beauty, and, you know, they call it the big sky country, and it's just so true, like, you just, where you can just see from horizon to horizon, and, you know, I just had a true appreciation for the country, and that's what I really like to encourage people to get that out there and drive around, because it does give you such an appreciation for what a great country we have, and it's just so diverse, the geography and the people and it's great, and it makes you appreciate also, just how huge it is, how you can just drive for days and days and days, and keep right on going. I'd love to do it more often. I have two little boys now, so we're staying at home here for the next few years, but I can't wait to get them out there on the road and start experiencing some of this actually, from a father's side instead of just being a single guy.
That's right. Well, and you're giving them a tremendous gift of love, to share our world with your children. And in due time, you'll be able to actually do that, my family, of course, had an absolute fit that I was going, what? You're going to do what? You're going to leave the island and travel the mainland? I mean, they were very frightened for me. And so, of course, my brother, being well-traveled himself, had given me some insight and tips, basic exercise of common sense. But you still find yourself, every once in a while getting into an uncomfortable situation. Like I remembered being in Texas, and I was hungry and went in to order something to eat, and it was like I didn't even exist. They wouldn't look at me. They wouldn't talk to me. And I couldn't get anyone's attention just to order a hamburger. I actually had to go find someone to order me a hamburger.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. And, of course, coming from Hawaii, I didn't understand that. I was confused.
But those are the great stories, though, because that was one of the reasons that I wrote this book too, is how when people come back from trips, they always talk about the things that go wrong. It's not like, oh, I went to Europe and I saw the Colosseum and the Eiffel Tower. They talk about the rude waiter or getting locked out of their hotel or all the things that go wrong. And I think that just opens you up, and then you have that shared story where you can make somebody laugh, or they've been there in the same kind of thing. So that's why I wanted to have just like a series of things go wrong with Roast Beef in this book, and show how he perseveres on through all that adversity.
Real, because it was so real. Because I knew I had personally had traveled across country by myself, and from buses to motorcycles and everything else in between, and I did. I wanted to really get out there and experience the people, the land, and learn as much as I could. I'm like a walking sponge anyway, but I knew that before I really settled down with my life, I wanted to have that to always share with my own family. And I would write home constantly sharing, what I'd seen or what experiences I had. I mean, one of the experiences I had, and I was thinking about this today, matter of fact, is I had just bought a brand new car. It's, how they give you those paper plates until you get your original plates.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I decided I wanted to go down and drive to Cabo San Lucas. So I crossed over the southern border of Mexico.
Yeah.
And I would say a good 2 hours south, after I had passed the border, all of a sudden, I saw about 30, 35 men gathered around and was completely surrounded by Federated soldiers with real guns.
Yeah. Wow.
And I thought, what the heck is going on here?
Oh, no.
But here I am.
So don't leave me hanging. What happened?
Well, of course, there was one guy that spoke, I guess the Hispanic language, and he was pretty darn rough and hot around the collar and stuff, you know, and I didn't let him intimidate me. I stayed very calm. And, of course, he was asking me for my driver's license, and I still had my state of Hawaii driver's license. And out of the blue, the colonel next to him said, "Oh, you from Hawaii?" And I said, "Yes." And then he says, "What you doing over here?" And I said, "I came to visit the people here because I understand your culture is very similar to our own culture. So I wanted to spend some quality time with the locals." Mm-hmm. And he goes, and the other guy was, you know, he wanted to, you know, search the car, and he was asking me if I had weapons, this and that and so forth, you know, and wanted to get through all the suitcases and everything. Well, lucky for me, the man that realized, that could speak English, realized that I was indeed from Hawaii, and he talked to the other guy and had them move away from the car, and I didn't even get searched either. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. So, and did you end up making it all the way down to Cabo?
Actually, I stopped just before Cabo San Lucas, soon after that, because it wasn't, you know, I wasn't too far from Cabo San Lucas. You know, the one thing I had heard about was the bandits and not to stop for them.
Yeah.
And some of the techniques that they actually use. And sure enough, David, there's this big truck that is blocking both lanes of the road I was traveling on, and he was staring right at me. And, of course, I remembered what had been shared to me. So I literally gunned the gas and took my vehicle all the way around him and just kept hauling down the road.
That's good.
And, of course, I was looking in my viewer mirror going, bye-bye.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. Stay out of Mexico for a while.
You know, they're good. And, you know, here was this, you know, I was in my early 20s, you know, I must have been around 19, 20, 21, somewhere around there when I was traveling. And I just had to go down there. I heard so much about Cabo San Lucas, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, and of course, no one told me about the Federated Soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have to say, all in all my experiences of traveling throughout the northern states of within the United States, all the states in between, and all the southern states, it's always been consistent of the spirit of the human, of humans on this planet, because there's so many wonderful human beings, truly are, where they take you in, or if you need something to eat, or, you know, a place to lay your head.
Yeah, well, and I, you know, I just believe that, you know, how you show up is how people are going to treat you. So if you're, you know, if you're there and you're friendly and curious and open and respectful, you're going to get it back. You know, not 100% of the time, but more often than not. So that was my experience on the road, you know, just to, you know, because I was out there for an adventure, and that's what I hope comes across in Roast Beef's Promise, too, that, you know, he's, you know, just a young guy just trying to get some experience and fulfill his dad's dying wish and do it in a positive way.
Yes, absolutely. So let me just ask you,
where are some of your favorite places to visit in the United States?
I will have to say Yosemite is my utmost favorite.
Okay.
This is land that will just reach into the depths of your soul, and it will literally take your breath away. And I've been all over the United States and seen many things. You know, I love the Grand Canyon, and I've visited it quite frequently.
Uh-huh.
Or the Niagara Falls, or what are those, David, please forgive me, but, you know, they have the geysers that shoot straight up in the midair.
Old Faithful?
I've seen all of those.
Yeah.
What's that?
Old Faithful at Yellowstone?
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about? Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But Yosemite is going to definitely touch deep inside of you.
Well, on that recommendation, I'm going to have to get up there.
Absolutely. And take the whole family as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they will. There's a lot for, you know, for families. And this is something that even your children probably at this age, how old are they, by the way?
6 and 4. So it might be a while.
Ah.
But, they love getting out and hiking, so I'm sure we'll be doing that at some point.
There's a lot of natural waterfalls. There's just lots of streams and you know, like shallow areas of where water, and it's so crystal clear. There's a lot of animals. So that would be the only concern I would say is that, you know, you'll have to be aware of that because, like, raccoon walked right up to me.
Oh, wow.
I've never seen a raccoon, okay? So
yeah.
You can just envision what that might have been for me at the moment.
Yeah. Ooh. Funny.
There's beavers and antelope and, I mean, just all kinds of wonderful, wonderful things and birds that I've never even seen before, you know, they're there at Yosemite. And it, especially around March and April, the whole park becomes alive with a burst of color.
Yeah.
Enough of that.
Well, I'm definitely going up.
Now, if you
love it so much.
If you come to Arizona, you let me know because I've got a secret place here that's breathtaking as well that'll touch you deeply.
All right, you tell me about it off the air because I do come to Arizona probably about 3 or 4 times a year.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble now.
Okay.
I'm just teasing you. But I did want to take a moment. You know, it's just amazing, this book. I know that what the book, the biggest message I received from this book as I sat and curled up on my sofa to really dive in and experiencing through the eyes of roast beef is the wonderful human spirit. And to be able, what a grand place that we all live. And that even when we think that our world is extremely challenging, as we all know, but our world also has a lot to offer each and every one of us. And you will find this as you give yourself permission to get out there and really experience our world, you're going to find that the human spirit is very much still there. There's a lot of wonderful people that are reaching out and touch your heart, to those that will sit and share their own stories of things that you may not have even heard of before or even experienced in your own lifetime. And it really gives you that endo window where you're able to look through other people's eyes. Wouldn't you agree, David?
Yeah, absolutely, and that just goes to like what I was saying earlier about just talking to people. You know, if you can just strike up conversations with people, particularly older people that have more life experience, that's one of my favorite things to do. You know, I'm much more of a listener than a talker. I'm out, you know, promoting the book and doing all this talking, but I would much prefer, you know, talking to you and hearing more of your stories and, you know, and everybody's stories. That's more my nature. So, you know, and that's why I think, you know, God gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth. So that I really enjoy that and, you know, just also being in the moment. I wanted to bring up for just a minute. I don't know. Have you ever seen the movie Peaceful Warrior?
Yes, I have. Matter of fact, I own it.
Yeah, that is a great movie, and we were talking a little bit earlier, and I forget exactly what we were talking about, but that is such a great story about being in the moment, you know, that there's always something going on to experience, and somebody shared that be with me, and it's been really important because, you know, there's no such thing as being bored or dull or anything. There's so much to experience if you actually tune in to what's going on around you. And that's really the message of that movie. And hopefully that's what, you know, some elements of Roast Beef came through, that, you know, he's constantly having experiences, you know, and that's why people have told me how fast the book reads, because, you know, there's just like constant experience that he's going through, you know, all 48 states, and it's just coming at him. And I just try to, you know, jot down what he's going through and just keep the story moving forward. So, you picked up on that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and you know, I truly desire to honor all the authors that, you know, come onto this show, and so I take time out to really dive into their books. One is, you know, I understand what that individual that has taken the time out to write a book is really offering to all of us. And, you know, I'm one of those people I feel very strongly is knowledge is empowerment. But there's many levels of it, because what you've done here is you've captured the true essence of the human spirit. You've not only done that, but you've also captured the value of the family bond and how strong that is. You know, we've seen our world today where, you know, we've gotten so caught up in just trying to meet our everyday needs that we've lost that sense of family.
Yeah.
And that closeness, that family. I know, you know, I'm from the old school, David, so don't be telling on how old I am here. From the old school, and that's what I was taught, is to have strong family bonds and honor and respect, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the timing issue has been great too, you know, just because we are going through, you know, an economic downturn right now, and you have to, you know, kind of reflect back on the important things. And so that's why I hope people pick up on those messages about, you know, commitment to family and perseverance against adversity, and, you know, and have a few laughs along the way. So, I'm glad you read it and really like it, and I hope other people will do it too.
I do. I really, really do. And, you know, I read a lot of books. And the show has been really blessed to have great authors and great books that have come, you know, shared with this show. And you are right up there with the other authors, let me tell you. You know, when I first got the book and I went, Roast Beef Promise, okay. You know, and I went, let me see here. And once I started diving into the book, I said, yes, I've got to set up this interview, and you've done an excellent job. By the way, I got a great joke for you. Would you like to hear it?
I'd love it.
Okay, it's one of my favorites, but I think people just kind of humor me with the joke. But I'd like to ask you: do you know why Tiger Woods wears two pairs of socks?
No.
Oh, David, please, come on. I'll give you a second chance.
Why does Tiger Woods wear two socks?
Yeah, two pairs of socks.
In case he gets a hole in one?
You got it. It's so funny. I know a lot of pro golfers, right? And I love messing with them. They're great guys. So I walk up to him and say, hey, by the way, do you know why Tiger Woods wears two pairs of socks? They look at me with this confused look, right? And they go, no. And I'll say, just in case he gets a hole in one.
That's a good one.
Or they want to suck my neck. Anyway, don't mind me. But I understand. You, before we have to let you go, because we are getting close to the end of this show, you'll have to come back, okay?
I'd love to
have you back.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, I might have to ask you for a blurb for the second edition of this book, since you have such glowing endorsements.
Oh, well, the thing is that it's truth. That's exactly how I feel about the book. End of story. This is truth, baby. You did an excellent job, and I was thrilled to be able to meet you and talk with you, and I wanted to really thank you for reminding me to sit down and reflect on my own wonderful experiences.
Well, good. I'm glad you took that from it.
Yes, I did. I did indeed. I've got a new title for you, David.
Okay.
And that's Wedding Crasher.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought I'd give you that just in case you wanted to use it in the near future. And would you real quick share that you crashed someone's wedding? I thought that was funny.
This is a great story. I was about 12 years old, and I live in Fullerton, California, and Tommy Lasorda lives in our town. And one of the Dodgers scouts lives right in my neighborhood, and he has a beautiful backyard. And so Tommy Lasorda's daughter was getting married, and she got married in the backyard of this the baseball scout that's right in my neighborhood. And it just so happened that my friend's backyard backed up to their backyard. So while it was all going on, and this is 1978, and so Tommy Lasorda and all the Dodgers are there, and he invited, Frank Sinatra, Don Rickles, like all these celebrities and everything. And so we're just watching it over the fence. And then I forget exactly who had the idea, but we all thought, you know what? If we go put on our Sunday finest, we could just jump over the fence right now and get right into this wedding, and everybody would think that we're just somebody's kid. And so that's what we did. We all just ran home real quick, put on our best clothes and came back. And we just kind of hopped over this fence by, the tree or bush or whatever, and nobody saw us getting in. And next thing you know, we're in this wedding, and, it's the reception, so everybody's having fun, and they're not paying attention to us anyway. But I was able to get, all these autographs, and I met Frank Sinatra. And, I knew he was famous, but I didn't know he was this, like, iconic entertainment figure. And so later on, I would tell people how I met Sinatra, and they just couldn't believe it. And then Don Rickles was giving me the business because it was summertime, and I would kind of buzz my hair during the summer to keep it nice and short. And so he was, asking me like what my barber had against me and all this kind of stuff. And, it was just one of those great experiences, just by, putting yourself out there and taking a risk. So, Even back at that age, I was doing stuff like that.
That's right. Taking a risk. Life is to be celebrated. Life is to be lived. And so that was another message that I received reading your book, Roast Beef Promise. And I really want to thank you. And real quick, David, before we say goodnight to you, is, keep us posted on your new developments. It's been a real honor to have you with us. Any last-minute words that you would like to convey to all the listeners this evening before we say goodnight?
Well, I would just say, if you have any way to do it, just get out there and, get on the road and experience it. It doesn't cost a whole lot of money. If you can go the cheap way, but the main thing is to just get out there and have the experience and try to, meet people and have a great experience. No pain, no gain, no risk, no guts, no glory. So you got to just go for it, and life is to be lived, and you got to just do it.
Absolutely. Ditto on that, David.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to share this with all you listeners for this evening. And the title of this book is Roast Beef Promise, author David Jerome. His links are snackbooks.com. You'll also find David on MySpace/roastbeefpromise.com or Facebook/roastbeefpromise.com. So you let us know, David, when you're ready to come back onto the show. We'd love to have you back. Keep up the great work. And what's the next title of your book again?
Well, the one I'm working on right now, the working title is Roast Beef Sprinkles. And that's the one where, he'll have his own little business and sprinkle people's ashes, around the world. So I'm going to work on that this summer and hopefully have a rough draft by fall.
Excellent. And thank you for sharing that with us. You have a great night, David. We look forward to your return to the show. Lots of love, blessings to you, your wife, and your two children. And we'll say good night to you. I'd like to remind all the listeners out there, we honor and we thank you all for tuning in to the Universal Spiritual Connection. Remember, greatness starts with you. Be kind to yourselves. Be kind to others. Remember that each breath you take, each step, is that you are indeed an expression of the voice of your heart. Good night to each and every one of you, and God bless. God bless, David.
Thanks, Leilani. I enjoyed it.
Maybe one day God will show me what I need. Right now, I'm not so sure about myself. Will I ever